Please sit down. Good morning. I want to talk about today about being signs of hope and how we equip each other and others for life. Because it's what we do that has the greatest impact on the life of the world around us, not just what we believe. I'm going to go round the houses a bit today. I want to talk to you about how difficult it is to be a parent sometimes, but how difficult it is to be a young person, growing up and finding their way around the world. I want to talk about how we, in each generation, could be signs of hope for the world. So, question one is, how do we equip ourselves for that vital task? Well, here's my Blue Peter moment. The one I made earlier, or lit earlier, a light. Because today is Candlemas. The service of the Holy Eucharist was a time, because this was a time when candles are blessed and taken home and lit at home, to remind us that candles represent light, yes. And the light is the symbol for Christ, as described by Simeon in today's reading, when he held the baby Jesus in his arms and announced, "My eyes have seen your salvation, a light for the revelation of the Gentiles." Now, you know what these are, don't you? They're snowdrops. But do you know what their other name is? No, they are Candlemas bells. Ah, you knew that anyway. So this is a symbol of hope. They are signs of hope because Candlemas bells ring out with hope. Because during the dark winter months, when spring seems so far away, suddenly, there they are. You go out one winter's day and they are blooming amongst the earth. They thrust themselves through. They are signs of hope of the spring colour to come. Spring is returning. So what other signs of hope are there in our public life? Three quotes. "There is no other reason for running for public office than to want to make a difference, being public witnesses for the vulnerable. Scripture, tradition and reason are a big part of the way I approach things because that was the way I was brought up. I've always fought for those who need a helping hand because communities are stronger when no one is left behind." So spoke men and women of faith. They are senators and representatives in the American Congress. I think it's particularly good at this time when there seems to be so much bad press about politicians in England and Europe and in America that it's good to read that some do carry their faith into the marketplace, the workplace. These politicians have been equipped to act in faith. Equipped to act by the way they were brought up and how they were nurtured in their homes and in their churches during their formative years. As I said, it's what we do that has the greatest impact on the life of the world around us. But listen to this. "I don't feel equipped to answer challenging questions about how God lets all these terrible things happen." So said a young lady in a series of interviews about why the church doesn't seem to be relevant to their lives. Another said, "I sometimes volunteer in the night shelter. Kindness and charity in the work of sustaining a tolerant community are the aspects of religion which I value most. But there is no part of the Christian faith which appeals to me. I value fellowship within our community. Our vicar very obviously cares about us. I believe in God. I have a relationship with God, but I don't attend church." Now, these are the words of young people I read in a report who are seeking to make a difference in the world, but are finding it difficult. And they're finding it difficult because they don't feel equipped. They don't feel equipped either spiritually or with knowledge, with the wisdom and courage needed to take their faith, such as it is, into the marketplace, the world of work, or before, or during, or after school. Somebody much wiser than me wrote, "It's time. It's time to start listening to these young people." Well, we need to listen to the needs of young people, yes, but old people as well, all people. But this morning, I want to focus on the needs of these young people. Young people who desperately crave somewhere safe to belong. I've heard many reports about young people suffering depression, anxiety, and feelings of low esteem. And am I right? Is that true for any one of you? Do you feel supported? And what can we do? I don't know if young people have ever needed more the message of hope and grace. And young people have their own prophetic message of hope to bring to the church. So said a youth worker who works closely with this demanding but essential group in our churches today. And how can we help them? Who can bring hope to young people seeking meaning to their lives? How can we equip them, give them wisdom? A report into the Church of England schools emphasised that it is the church's role to provide the vital equipping of young people, equipping them with the values caught rather than taught, caught through role modelling and establishing relationships. Then they will grow in wisdom, hope, and a sense of community, a sense of belonging, knowing that they are loved, knowing that they are valued, knowing that they have something to offer the whole community. We need to show young people that we, the church family, love them and give them hope for the future, equip them, just as men of politics out there today, valuing and working for the vulnerable, making a difference in life, if they were equipped with strong foundational faith through their upbringing, through their parents, their network of family and friends, and most especially through their church. Just as they were called to do that, so are we called to equip the young of our parish. Now, in today's reading, there was a huge amount of theology I could have gone into from our gospel, this vivid account where we see Jesus, Mary, Joseph, Simeon, and Anna in a vast temple bigger than this. But what struck me most was the thought of how Jesus' parents reacted to what Simeon and Anna said to them. Amazement. They reacted with amazement. Jesus had been surrounded by extraordinary signs at his birth. Well, first off, angels announced to Mary that she was going to have a baby. Huh. Shepherds and wise men came to worship Jesus as he lay in a manger. More astonishing stuff for poor Mary and Joseph to take in. And now extraordinary prophecies, promises of pain, a sword to pierce Mary's soul. Just who was their son going to be? When we are faced with issues of great importance beyond our understanding, I don't know about you, but I think it's a good idea to go home and live as normal a life as possible and think and reflect and pray. So, Mary and Joseph went home, brought up Jesus to be a member of their extended family, which had been quite usual at the time. Their son increased in wisdom, was popular with family and with neighbours, was devout and blessed by God. Well, that's how I read this verse, 40. The child grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favour of God was upon him. So, how did Mary and Joseph cope with their parenting, knowing that they were bringing up an exceptional child? Has that happened to you? Who helped Mary? Well, of course, Joseph, her steadfast, loyal and supportive husband. And also she had the support of her cousin Elizabeth, whom she visited when Elizabeth was 6 months pregnant with John the Baptist. And of course, that vital network of support of friends and neighbours. So how did Jesus turn out? Well, he was a challenging child. We meet him a few verses later in Luke 41 to 52, the young boy debating in the temple with his fathers. And he was just 12 years old. He seemed to have an astonishing self-assurance and deep knowledge of the scriptures. Then he went home and was obedient to his parents, which must have been a great relief to them. When we look at life of Jesus the man, we discern that he was full of compassion and great courage. He was very knowledgeable about the Torah. He was completely open to God and spent much time with him alone whenever he could. He enjoyed a good laugh, he went to parties, he cried when his friends died, and he cared about the sick and healed them because he could. That speaks to me of an excellent equipping, of nurturing, of support given to him by his parents. The path to adulthood is not smooth. Each generation has to discover for itself their relationship with God. When children leave home, they begin to fly free, free to explore their own relationship in faith, their own understanding of the world and their place in it, to develop their comprehension of God, very much by trial and error one feels. Certainly that was my experience. When I left home at 17, I was away at sea for months at a time, open to the corrupting influences of the world, and very little moral guidance from anyone other than my own conscience and, of course, the influence of my upbringing. And that's free will in action, is it not? But parents are not always appreciated by adolescents flexing their moral muscles, seeking their own road. Remember when Jesus said to the crowds pressing about him, "You are my mother, my brothers and sisters, you who do the will of God." "What about me?" Mary must have said to herself, and maybe to Jesus later, "What about me?" Because at first glance, it sounds a bit like a rejection of parental authority. But all that Mary and his brothers had done was to try and check his excesses, because they thought he was behaving very oddly. Was he mad? It's painful being a parent. It's hard. For Mary, the sword predicted by Simeon was beginning to pierce her soul. Mary was finding it difficult to let her son fly free of her constricting concerns and viewpoints. Obviously, she still cherished him. She had equipped him for the journey. But his journey led him to a place that she must have found very difficult to endure. So what sustained Mary at this time? Where did she find a hope? 3 days after she had watched her son die on the cross, she had an experience of enormous turmoil. Her risen son greeted her. What? I believe that Jesus would have explained to her, just as he explained to the rest of the apostles, the meaning of his resurrection, because it's the greatest sign of hope for all humanity. Life after death, it is the big sign. Jesus, the light of the world, that we are to follow. So how have we in our lives been signs of hope? What is it that we do that has the greatest impact on the world around us? Not just about what we believe, it's what we do. How have we acted in the name of Christ to make a difference, to be public witnesses for the vulnerable, to be helping hands, to ensure that no one else has been left behind? What have we done to ensure that our children in our charge grow strong, are filled with wisdom, and find favour with God? What do you young people do to bring hope into the world for God. These Candlemas bells are a sign of hope, and when you see them trembling into the hedgerows, remember they call out, be signs of hope. Be signs of hope in what we do, in what we say, so that we may support others on the journey, so that they may too be signs of the kingdom. That God's kingdom may come on earth as it is in heaven. And we take our lights home, not to put them under the bushel, but to let them shine for all the world to see. Amen.